Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Today's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm your host today, Dave Allen. Melody off taking care of other important business. For all your gold and silver needs, call us toll free at 1-800-375-4188. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you some opinions and commentary on the economic and political news of the day for Tuesday, August 15, 2023. Hello, Melody. And hello to your visiting VIP Barb, who I know are listening in today. And happy National Relaxation Day, which encourages us to slow down and unwind amid all the hustle and bustle of these dog days of August. Yes, today's a day to focus on taking care of ourselves. Taking a moment to relax. National Relaxation Day is an important day as we all need a break from time to time from the fast pace and often hectic lifestyles we live. Our production engineer, Todd, can tell you all about that sometime. Taking time to recuperate and rejuvenate our tired minds and bodies may help prevent many health risks, too. Like the founder of this day suggested, too much work can actually make us sick, run down, tired, and that's just plain wrong. But he was right. It's been proven over and over that stress can be harmful to our health, both mentally and physically. Most doctors agree that finding ways to relax and reduce stress will improve overall health and help us to live longer and happier lives. So, yes, Melody and Barb, after today's program, I'm heading out to the hot tub to relax and finish my book. Let's get to today's market report. First, in the precious metals markets, gold down a little over $4 or 0.2% at just shy of 19.04 in the New York spot market, as active traders reacted early to retail sales news and Minneapolis Fed Pres Neil Kashkari's talking about stricter banking regulations. Silver down also about 0.2%. A nickel, $22.64. Platinum down $12 at 900 even. And palladium down about 3%, $36 at 1,260 $8, excuse me. Now, the U.S. dollar, when I looked earlier, it was down slightly. It's actually gone up just a tad. Well, in fact, up about 0.2%, at 103.21, continuing its multi-week increase. We've got domestic crude oil down about $1.51 at $81 even. Got international Brent crude down just a little bit less, $1.29 at just shy of $85 at $84.94. Interestingly, global rice prices surged close to 12-year highs today as flood risks in China continue to rise. And in the U.S. Treasury market, that's been bouncing around. The 10-year yield up about 0.037 to yield 4.22. That round, rounding to that. Got the 2-year yield down slightly, still yielding a greater 4.95. And the 3 months still over 5% at 5.45, still suggesting that investors believe the Fed will be lowering interest rates sooner than later. We'll talk, we'll talk a lot about that in today's program. Yeah. And last, in the equities, most equities across the globe down today, except for the Nikkei, up about 0.5%. In the States here, the Dow Jones down 361 points, 1%, 34,946. We got the NASDAQ down a little over 1%, 157 points at 13,631. And the S&P 500 index also down 1%, about 52 points, 4,438 it rounds to. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is today's DGS Coins Market Report. Again, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. Mortgage rates have climbed again, with a 2-day rise pushing the 30-year average to its highest level in more than 5 weeks. Rates were up for most loan types, while a handful of jumbo and adjustable averages held steady. Rates on 30-year new purchase mortgages gained another 9 basis points yesterday, adding to Friday's big jump to climb a combined 33 basis points over those 2 days. Now it's 7.66. The flagship average has hit its most expensive mark since July 6, when it surged to 7.7 and is flirting with levels not seen in, 21 years. After its early July spike, the 30-year average plunged a week later to 7.17, but has since then been bobbing around in the lower to mid 7% ranges. The 15-year average also rose for a second straight day, adding 5 more basis points for a 2-day rise of 31 basis points, bringing the 15-year average back up to 7.08. That's particularly high and not below its July 6th peak of 7.11, highest in 15 years. The jumbo 30-year average, meanwhile, it held its estimated 14-year high of 6.77. Among the standard adjustable loans, the 5-6 ARM average rose 8 basis points, while the 7-6 and 10-6 ARMs held steady. After a historical plunge in August of 2021, which lowered the 30-year average to a remarkable 2.89%, mortgage rates have simply skyrocketed over the last 2 years, Major surges were seen in June and October last year, and May and July this year, with the most recent peak for 30-year rates taking the average to what's considered to be a, well, a little over a 20-year high. However, it's difficult to nail down precisely how far back we'd have to go to find rates this high, since daily average rates weren't published before 2009. And we do know that mortgage rates are determined by a complex interaction of macroeconomic and industry factors, including the level and direction of the government's bond market, most notably 10-year yields, treasuries, the Fed's monetary policy, especially as it relates to buying or selling government-backed mortgages, and competition between mortgage lenders and across loan types. Because fluctuations can be caused by any number of these factors at once, it's generally difficult to attribute the change to any one factor. And not surprisingly, home builder confidence weakened in August for the first time this year, according to a report, separate report released today, as the record-breaking mortgage rates and still high housing prices are discouraging prospective buyers. National Association of Home Builders Wells Fargo Housing Market Index. It's a heck of an acronym. What does that come out to? NAHBWFHMI. I can't even pronounce that one. Sorry. It retreated to 50 in August from a 13-month high of 56 in July. Builder confidence was largely undermined by a drop in prospective buyer traffic, which fell to 34 in August from a year-long high of 40 the month before. Now, we know, as we talked about, builder confidence swelled in the first half of 2023 as demand for new homes was propped up by, well, a bunch of existing homes on the market, despite the Fed's 525 basis points worth of interest rate hikes since March last year. Many current homeowners are locked into low mortgage rates and have been reluctant to put their existing homes on the market amidst this expensive financing options. In fact, one quarter of all builders cut prices to bolster sales in August. That's the first increase of that sort since March. And on top of that, builders' sales expectations for the next 6 months fell 4 points to 55 in August, suggesting the share of builders cutting prices could increase further to incentivize buyers in the coming weeks, if not months. More widespread price cuts would be welcome news for the Fed's campaign to rein in inflation. The home builder's chief economist, Bob Dietz, said declining customer traffic is a reminder of the larger challenge of shelter inflation that's up 7.7% from a year ago and accounted for a striking 90% of this July CPI reading of 3.2%. He continued, the best way to bring housing inflation down and ease the housing affordability crisis is to enact policies at all levels of government to allow builders to build more homes to address a nationwide shortfall of about 1.5 million housing units. Wow. Well, staying on the topic of interest rates, traders betting that interest rates here will remain higher than inflation far into the future drove 10-year real yields to a 14-year high and spurred gains for the dollar yesterday. The real or inflation-adjusted yield in the 10-year Treasury debt climbed more than 6 basis points to 1.84% in late New York trading. And again, that's the highest level since 2009. The allure of positive returns is drawing investors to the dollar, which has rallied about 3% from more than a one-year low just last month. That's been putting pressure on on gold and silver in particular. Nominal Treasury yields also climbed, with the 10-year rate briefly exceeding 4.21% for the first time since November, as traders lowered expectations for Fed interest rate cuts next year. The latest push higher in long-dated yields will further increase mortgage and corporate borrowing costs, which, as we know, in turn slow the economy. BMO Capital advisors noted, from an economic perspective, the longer inflation-adjusted borrowing costs stay this high, the more material the fallout will be on both the corporate and consumer behavior. The dollar reached its highest level against China's yuan this year and strengthened to 145.6 yen, approaching an exchange rate that motivated the Bank of Japan to intervene last year to bolster their own fiat currency. According to the too-big-to-fail Goldman Sachs strategist, it is hard for the dollar to go down meaningfully when the market's focused on either U.S. outperformance or higher U.S. bond yields. They say it's a new model for the dollar, which until recently was widely deemed to be running out of steam. Even as the Fed approaches the end of its tightening cycle, the currency can benefit from resilient economic growth, at least according to the conventional thinking. The moves are being heightened as hedge funds continue to trim their short positions in the dollar. A barometer of market positioning and sentiment in the options market shows investors are the most bullish on the dollar since late March. Meanwhile, several policymakers are insisting there's more work to do to get inflation back below target. More on that later in today's program. A recent surge in natural gas and crude oil prices has highlighted inflationary risks, while a surge in both corporate and governmental debt issuance continues to weigh on the market. Even one-time bond king Bill Gross said U.S. debt was overvalued and estimates the fair value for a 10-year treasury right now, 4.5%. In other economic news, consumer spending held up well in July as inflation slowed, with retail sales turning in a stronger than expected showing for the month. That's according to the Commerce Department report released today. The advanced retail sales report showed a seasonally adjusted increase of 0.7 of a percentage point for the month, better than the 4%, I'm sorry, the 0.4 of a percent estimate. Now, excluding auto, sales rose a robust 1%, also against that same 0.4 of a percent forecast. Both readings were the best monthly gains since January this year. As these numbers aren't adjusted for inflation, they show a consumer able to keep ahead of price increases that have been prevalent over the past 2 years. As we recall, the CPI rose 0.2% on the month, indicating solid demand. July numbers were boosted by a 1.9% jump in spending at online retailers, while sporting goods and related stores increased 1.5%. Food service and drinking places rose 1.4%. On the downside, furniture sales slumped 1.8%. And electronics and appliance stores reported a 1.3% drop. Gas station sales rose about 0.4%, despite rising prices at the pump. Now, the report adds to the narrative that the economy may be able to avoid that much predicted broad and deep recession brought on by a series of Fed interest rate hikes aimed at reducing inflation. Despite 11 rate hikes since March last year, totaling 5.25 percentage points, consumers, who power about 2/3 of the entire $26.8 trillion economy, have, well, persevered. One Wall Street analyst said, despite the additional pressure put on the Fed, Americans' sustainability to spend speaks to the strength of the U.S. economy in the face of global economic challenges. Well, as personal savings have begun to dry up, shoppers have shown a willingness to use credit cards, the balance of which exceeded $1 trillion for the first time in the second quarter of 2023. July's data showed that spending was widespread, with most categories showing increases. However, motor vehicle sales fell 0.3% on a 12-month basis. Sales rose 3.2%. Which is in line exactly with the annual increase in the CPI. A separate report today, however, showed that inflation pressures are lingering after hitting their 40-year high last summer, in fact. Import prices moved 0.4% higher, According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, that was only the second monthly gain this year, as the year-over-year rate declined 4.4%. That's down exactly 50% from last year's 8.8%. Well, I'm sure you do. I hear that music. It means we're heading out for a short break. I hope you'll stick around for these important messages. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it. Nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home. And if you ask me how I'm feeling, don't tell me you're too blind to see. Never gonna give you up, never gonna let you down, never gonna run around and desert you, never gonna make you cry, never gonna say goodbye, never gonna tell a lie and hurt you.
And welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody will be back tomorrow. Call us toll-free at 1-800-375-4188. No one answers. Leave a message. We'll get back to you as soon as we can. Or look us up on the web at dgscoins.com. While you're there, sign up for our free weekly newsletters and blogs. Again, that's dgscoins.com. Just one other story here before I get back to talking about the Fed and interest rates and all that jazz. Manufacturing activity in New York State tumbled more than expected, this month, though firms have become more optimistic about their six-month outlook. It's according to new data out from the New York Fed today. The Empire State Manufacturing Survey's General Business Conditions Index fell to minus 19 from 1.1 in July. And that's the first time since May the index has had a negative reading. Economists had been expecting the index to tick down to just minus 1.4. The index signals that activity at manufacturers contracted fairly moderately in August, coming in below the zero threshold that separates expansion from contraction. About 16% of respondents reported that conditions had improved over the month, while 35% reported conditions worsening. Firms were becoming more optimistic about their prospects for the next 6 months, however, with the index for future business conditions up about 5.5 points to 19.9. its highest level in more than a year. New orders and shipments were also expected to increase significantly as well as employment. New York Fed added capital spending expectations also sharply rose. Now, as Fed officials close in on the end of their tightening campaign, at least for this cycle, the debate's shifting from how high interest rates need to go to how long they should stay there. Inflation pressures, well, they are easing, which could give policymaking FOMC members room to keep interest rates at or near current levels for the time being. Still, price gains remain well above the Fed's 2% target, making officials reluctant to declare victory. Now, introducing the discussion over how long officials may keep rates steady at an upper range of, 5.5%, even if inflation continues to fall, could help them push back on expectations for rate cuts and allow them to keep putting downward pressure on the economy. According to former senior Fed official Brian Sack, this is the policy dimension that they will likely focus on the most going forward, not how much higher to take the Fed funds rate, but how long to keep it at these levels. Minutes from the last Fed meeting set for release tomorrow could provide more insight into whether officials believe those increases have worked their way through the economy or if they still expect to see more effects. Recent data suggests inflation continues to move in the direction Fed policymakers favor. Consumers' year-ahead inflation expectations unexpectedly declined this month, matching more than a two-year low, but policymakers aren't unified on what their next step should be. With some, like Philadelphia Fed President Patrick Harker, saying last week that officials can hold rates where they are for a while, his words. Others, like Fed Governor Michelle Bowman, say more increases will be needed. Well, some officials are starting to downplay the significance of another potential rate increase, saying the more important takeaway is that they plan to hold rates at restrictive levels for some period of time. In a July Bloomberg survey of economists, more than a quarter see a reduction in January next year, with the median of that group seeing the first cut at the following meeting in March, with rates falling to 4.75% by next June. Investors largely expect the Fed to hold rates steady when they gather on September 19 and 20th and see about a 1 in 3 chance right now for a quarter point hike in November. It's according to the CME's Fed Watch tool. In another related story, the next 2 weeks should give us plenty of clues from Fed officials themselves for insight into where the Fed's headed with interest rates. Minneapolis Fed Pres Neil Kashkari will speak at the API Group Controllers Conference tomorrow, and the Fed's annual Jackson Hole Economic Symposium is next week. Live coverage on the Minneapolis Fed's YouTube channel starts at 11 a.m. Eastern Time for Kashkari's talk. The Fed's annual conference this year is August 24 to 26 in Wyoming and is expected, as usual, to draw central bankers, policymakers, academics, and economists from all around the globe. Fed Chair Jerome Powell will kick off the meeting, as he usually does, whose theme this year is structural shifts in the global economy, which markets are sure to sift through for any hints about what the Fed might do with rates at its three remaining meetings this year. Gina Bolvin, who runs Bolvin Wealth Management Group, says if the Fed wants to reorient investors, he will do it, meaning Powell, in Jackson Hole, as he did last August. You may recall Powell's talk at last year's symposium is instructive, I believe, for what lies ahead. He talked about three lessons that he and his Fed colleagues had been drawing on in their near obsession with bringing inflation back to 2%. The first lesson, he said, is that central banks can and should take responsibility for delivering low and stable inflation. And the second lesson, and again, these are his words, the second lesson is that the public's expectations about future inflation can play an important role in setting the path of inflation over time. And third, and I believe the most important right now, lesson he said is, quote, we must keep at it until the job is done. He concluded those remarks last year by saying, we will keep at it until we are confident the job is complete. Well, I expect Powell to harp on these lessons, particularly the third one, in his comments next week, or is it 2 weeks, whenever, at Jackson Hole. That's where I believe we'll be headed. Here's an interesting article in the battle between strongmen and democracies. Elected government, it appears, are pulling ahead, at least economically speaking. After the Great Recession hobbled the U.S. and much of the West in 2008, China's strong economy prompted a flurry of commentary about the benefits of its style of state-led capitalism, which eliminated the efficiencies that always accompany democracies. More than a decade later, the economic downside of unelected, unaccountable strongmen is on full display. Russia's ruble, it dove again yesterday, and its central bank raised rates by 3.5 percentage points in an emergency meeting, as the fiat currency hit the lowest level since the immediate aftermath of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Separately, China's financial system also wobbled yesterday as a major financial entity with ties to the country's troubled housing industry appeared to miss debt payments to investors. And that triggered worries of growing financial contagion. Today, China's central bank cut rates in a surprise move. Meanwhile, Turkey's strongman leader acknowledged in an official statement that the crushing burden of inflation in his country, brought on by a 70% collapse in the value of Turkey's fiat lira against the dollar over the last 3 years. Now, while all countries go through economic ups and downs, the troubles of Russia, China, and Turkey in particular appear inseparable from the catastrophic decisions made by their strongmen in charge. Vladimir Putin's decision to attack Ukraine has made Russia a pariah on the world stage and has estranged it from Europe, formerly its main customer for its commodity-based economy. That means it's increasingly forced to pay for massive military spending with large-scale borrowing and by burning through its national wealth fund. Xi Jinping, who swept aside decades of precedent to install himself as China's, well, leader for life, or at least a third straight term, launched crackdowns on the country's key industries there, imposed inhumane pandemic lockdowns. And he shifted the party's focus from prosperity to nationalism, as evidenced by all the military maneuvers around Taiwan, all of which have undermined economic confidence and sapped investment in that country. And Turkey's Recep Erdogan, in power since 2014 and recently reelected in a vote widely viewed as, we'll call it, engineered for his victory, has watched his country's currency lose 3/4 of its value over the last 5 years. That's coming as his central bank long refrained from raising rates, in part because of the president's strange personal theories about inflation. Certainly the U.S. economy isn't perfect either, by any means. Neither is democracy or constitutional republics. But compared to the other autocratic systems, having the ability to vote out erratic, ineffective, and unaccountable leaders seems to be serving us fairly well. All right, two short stories. First, the share of companies making moves to nearshore their production has nearly tripled this year, according to McKinsey's annual survey of supply chain leaders, out this morning. Supply chain resiliency, it's still a buzzword in corporate boardrooms. It didn't fail away as pandemic-related snarls dissipated. Nearshoring, which is moving production closer to the end consumer, is now a bigger priority, as many executives try to be more prepared for the unexpected, and especially as geopolitical tensions continue to rise. And over the last decade, supply chains have become too complicated, zipping goods back and forth across the globe before, well, they're ready for the consumer. And that's not good for an economy like ours or most others. And second, more Americans are falling behind on their credit card payments. The rate of new credit card delinquencies has surpassed its pre-pandemic level, clocking in at 7.2% last quarter, according to the New York Fed. Auto loan delinquencies are 7.3%, although mortgage delinquencies remain very low. Now, even as inflation declines, Americans are increasingly relying on credit cards to make their budgets work or to maintain their levels of consumption, as Moody's put it last week. And higher interest rates on credit cards push balances up higher. Because if you're not paying it all off at once, higher interest rates are taking a bigger chunk of your monthly payment instead of the principal. But here's a stunning stat. Credit card balances rose by $45 billion in the second quarter, rising past $1 trillion for the first time in the Fed's survey history. Now, returning to pre-pandemic delinquency levels, they say, isn't something to stress over right now. Delinquency rates on credit cards before the pandemic were relatively low, thanks to the strong job market. But millions of Americans are going to soon have to start making student loan payments again, and undoubtedly some will rely more on credit cards to maintain their spending levels. And that could potentially drive these delinquency rates higher. Now, here's an interesting story. It seems that nations all around the world are looking to unlock the moon's, our moon's, economic, scientific, and geopolitical value. The moon could be valuable high ground for the U.S., China, and other established space powers that see it as a crucial place to further assert dominance in space. India and others view the moon as a place to test new technology, perform science, and vault them into the rarefied air of the established space powers. Once there, countries and companies that can access water and other resources on the moon could use them to create more rocket fuel and travel deeper into the solar system to destinations like Mars and beyond. Some people say whoever gets to the moon and controls it is going to have a massive political, economic, and military power advantage, and it's going to propel them to dominate the coming century. That's according to Secure World Foundation's Brian Whedon. Russia launched its first mission to the moon in nearly 50 years last Thursday, aiming to land its Luna 25 lander in the lunar South Pole as early as August 21st. India also launched its own robotic mission to the lunar South Pole in July, with plans to land there a couple days later. Well, NASA and China are both aiming to send people to the same region in separate missions in the coming years that would establish a human presence on the moon. And as the International Space Station era comes to a close, the center of power in space is shifting to the lunar surface. The moon is an attractive destination only 3 days away, according to the Space Policy Institute's John Logsdon. Plus, scientists think there could be valuable water in the permanently shadowed craters in the moon's south pole, raising the possibility it could be mined and used to create rocket fuel that could carry astronauts deeper into space, to Mars, for example. It's just not clear yet how much of an economic or power advantage can be gained on the moon. Private companies are investing in the tech to get payloads there with the hope that once they are there, countries will act as their customers when they establish a human presence on the moon. Logsdon says this is a quest for treasure. Economic benefits may not be assured, but a new industry in space is already being built around the moon, lending more credence to nations that are aiming for the lunar surface. And while some of the science isn't assured, it's still not clear how much water is available and accessible and what it would take to create rocket fuel from it. But the possibilities are tantalizing. Looks like it's the moon, then Mars, and infinity and beyond. Hey, let's stop there. We're going to take another short break. I hope you'll stick around. You're listening to Financial Survival. Come on, babe. Don't say babe.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hey, one more time today. Welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of other business today. You know where to reach her, 1-800-375-4188. Hey, our weekly American Survival newsletter, which usually hits the street on Mondays, is being published late this week because of a medical procedure I had yesterday, but please don't fret. The newsletter will be out sometime tomorrow. It'll feature an article by Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs, also Doug Nolan's weekly Credit Bubble Bulletin blog, plus I'll have something about the economy. If you missed yesterday's program, you may not have heard that Swiss bank UBS has agreed to pay a combined $1.4 billion in civil penalties. Fine comes over fraud and misconduct in the bank's offering of residential mortgage-backed securities dating back to the global financial crisis in 2008. The bank, in its own statement yesterday, described the settlement as dealing with a legacy matter dating from 2006 and 2007, leading up to the financial crisis. Well, in any event, the settlement concludes the final case brought by the Department of Justice against several of the largest financial institutions over misleading statements made to the purchasers of those mortgage-backed securities. The cumulative recoveries in the case now total $36 billion. That's a lot of misleading. UBS's settlement is nearly the same as the value of the residential mortgages that originated between 05 and 07. That's the year it stopped issuing residential MBS. UBS originated $1.5 billion in residential mortgages in those 3 years, according to what the bank said in the 2018 statement challenging the Justice Department allegations. At the time, UBS said the vast majority of loans underlying the 40 mortgages listed in the complaint were originated by other financial institutions. Well, in the years leading up to the financial crisis, investment banks packaged, securitized, and sold bundles of mortgages to many institutional buyers. Those securities were rated and graded according to quality, with various tranches, as groups of mortgages, hypothetically safeguarding against the risk of complete default. But unbeknownst to buyers, those mortgages weren't as high quality as their rating suggested. Are we surprised? UBS, similar to other banks who settled with the Justice Department, were aware that the mortgages underneath the mortgage-backed securities didn't comply with underwriting standards. UBS conducted extensive due diligence on the underlying loans before it created and sold the securities, according to prosecutors. Yet, despite knowing of the significant issues with the products, it continued to sell them with great financial success. UBS had previously said that it had fulfilled its obligation to clients, which the bank said were highly sophisticated investors and some of the biggest financial institutions in the world. Justice Department has secured settlements with 18 other institutions over mortgage-backed security issues, including Too Big to Fail Bank of America, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, J.P. Morgan Chase, a five-time felon, and Wells Fargo, plus General Electric. Credit Suisse, the defunct Swiss bank now owned by UBS, also settled with the Justice Department over misconduct related to the MBS offerings. You know, when will these fellas ever learn? In fact, when will their main overseers, like the Fed, the FDIC, the Office of the Comptroller, and others, make them truly accountable and start revoking some charters? As Pam and Russ Martins have reported, together there have been a cumulative 351 legal actions levied against Wall Street's six biggest bailed out U.S. banks, who have been fined or settled for a total of $321 billion. And having received over $8 trillion in taxpayer bailouts, the likes of J.P. Morgan, Bank of America, Citibank, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and Wells Fargo are a national embarrassment that should have been broken up a long time ago. And I got that off my chest. A Fitch Ratings analyst warned that the banking industry has inched closer to another source of turbulence, the risk of sweeping rating downgrades on dozens of U.S. banks that could even include the likes of the big boys. The ratings agency cut its assessment of the industry's health in June, a move that analyst Chris Wolf said went largely unnoticed because it didn't trigger a downgrade on banks. Well, another one-notch downgrade of the industry score from A-plus from Double A minus would force Fitch to reevaluate ratings on each of the more than 70 U.S. bank it covers. Wolf said if we were to move it to A plus, then that would recalibrate all our financial measures and would probably translate into negative rating actions. Last week, Moody's downgraded 10 small and mid-sized banks and warned that cuts could come for another 17 lenders, including larger institutions like Too Big to Fail Truist and U.S. banks. Earlier this month, Fitch downgraded the U.S. government's long-term credit rating because of political dysfunction and growing debt loads, a move that was derided by Wall Streeters themselves, including J.P. Morgan's CEO Jamie Dimon. Wolf said this time Fitch is intent on signaling to the market that bank downgrades are a real risk. Well, the problem created by another downgrade to A+ is that the industry score would then be lower than some of its top-rated lenders. The country's two largest banks by asset size, J.P. Morgan and Bank of America, would likely be cut to A+ from AA- in this scenario, since banks can't be rated higher than the environment they operate in. And if the big boys like J.P. Morgan are cut, then Fitch would be forced to at least consider downgrades on all their peers' ratings. And that could potentially push some weaker lenders close to non-investment grade status, and that would be bad, bad news. In terms of what could push Fitch to downgrade the industry, the biggest factor is the path of interest rates, excuse me, determined by the Fed. Wolf added that a related issue is if the industry's loan defaults rise beyond what Fitch considers a historic norm, that would be bad news. Well, if the Fed's defaults tend to rise in a rate hiking environment, and Fitch has expressed concern in the impact of office loan defaults on especially smaller banks. Well, the impact of such broad downgrades is hard to predict. I mean, in the wake of recent Moody's cuts, analysts at Too Big to Fail Morgan Stanley said that downgraded banks would have to pay investors more to buy their bonds, and that further lowers profits. Wolf said, it's not inevitable that it goes down further, ratings, that is. We could be at AA- for the next 10 years. But if it does go down lower, there will be consequences. Oh, gosh, pardon me. My procedure yesterday was an endoscopy. They put that tube down your throat to check out your stomach and esophagus and what have you. And I'm feeling the effects of that, of course, as we speak. Look, a storm of public and private debt is definitely brewing here in the U.S., and the troubles are already beginning to show on the surface as loans pile up and borrow confidence falters. At a broad level, Fitch's ratings downgrade of the U.S. government's credit rating and Moody's downgrade of 10 banks earlier this summer together point to issues for both sovereign credit and debt originated out of the banking sector. There are more granular problems mounting across debt markets as well, as both private and public sectors face a drastic different environment than they did last decade when interest rates were at historic lows coming out of the Great Recession. If low rates spurred the sugar rush of heavy borrowing, well, rising rates may be setting the stage for the sugar crash. And this was on full display earlier this year when Silicon Valley Bank imploded. SVB, Signature Bank, and First Republic all fell in quick succession. The fallout from that event was relatively contained, but that hasn't stopped market pundits and investing icons from sounding the alarm on high debt levels in the era of rising rates. Even hedge fund billionaire Ray Dalio and economist Noriel Roubini are among those who've warned that a full-blown debt crisis could be on the way. Here are five warning signs that are flashing in U.S. debt markets. First, private debt levels. They're rising at a staggering pace and hit new records this year. Credit card debt, as I mentioned, just passed $1 trillion for the first time ever. Personal unsecured loans also hit a new record, notching an unprecedented $225 billion this year. But for corporate debt, which saw volumes grow over 6% over the last year to hit $7.8 trillion. National debt picture looks even worse. It blew, this is the government, federal government debt, blew past $32 trillion gross for the first time this year, with the potential for $5 billion to be added each day for the next 10 years, according to some. And second, corporate defaults are surging. Companies have begun to buckle under their debt burdens, especially as rates continue to rise, with the volume of defaults among U.S. companies this year already surpassing last year's total. We have 5 months left. 55 U.S. firms defaulted on their debt in the first 6 months of this year. It's a 53% increase from the 36 companies that defaulted in all of 2022. Up to $1 trillion of corporate debt could default if U.S. faces a full-blown recession. That's according to Bank of America. And third, late payments in general are piling up. People and companies are increasingly falling behind on loan payments. In the commercial real estate sector, percentage of commercial property owners that were late on payment for 30 days or more or have already defaulted on their mortgages rose to 3% in this year's first quarter, according to the Mortgage Bankers Association, and that's reversing a pre-existing downward trend. It's reflected in the rising rate of delinquencies on loans securing commercial mortgage bonds, which have been on the rise again this year. The delinquency rate for commercial property owners rose to 3% in the first quarter. Meanwhile, the delinquency rate for all personal loans rose to 2.2% in the first quarter, and that's up from 1.7% the prior quarter. And fourth, banks want to dump risky debt. Banks are already trying to dump loans that have a greater risk of default, even if it means selling those assets at a loss. Too big to fail, J.P. Morgan, Goldman Sachs, and Capital One are among those who are trying to get rid of large commercial real estate assets. We're hearing talk of a bubble in that sector. Banks are also pulling back on debt dealing altogether as financial conditions tighten across sectors and the country. And that spells trouble for commercial real estate, as there's around $1.5 trillion of that kind of debt that's set to reach maturity in the coming years and will need to be refinanced. Property owners could run into big trouble when they go to refinance their mortgages as rates are higher and property valuations have been falling. A wave of commercial mortgage defaults could be on the horizon, and banks have already started to rein in lending activity after the spasm of bank failures earlier this year that sparked that brief banking crisis. Ladies and gentlemen, a credit crunch has arrived. It's here. Banks recording the sharpest decline in lending on record. And that spells bad news in the coming months for a number of sectors that make up U.S. GDP. And could dash hopes that the Fed is taking us to a soft landing. Stick around. I mean, there's a lot more to be said on this in the next couple of weeks and months. A lot of uncertainty continuing out there. This is a market for the brave and for the patient, as most markets are, but this more than usual. Don't give up your long-term plan, ladies and gentlemen, and make sure you're insured with plenty of gold and silver. Hey, that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. Thanks, as always, to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please be safe out there. Have a good evening. Remember to relax. Bye-bye. I got to be a wealthy man. I would